Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
And welcome into Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Loggeman alongside Tony Baselli, our usual guy, Mr. J.P. Shadwick, as we like to call him, is going to be joining us shortly from Indianapolis, the home of the NFL Combine, which is really kind of gotten rolling. A lot of the coaches and the general managers have been up to the podium, the players as well, and we'll get an update from J.P. Shadrick shortly. But really the news of the week was the discussion of the shipyards that happened on Tuesday's press conference where the State of the Union franchise occurred, and Tony, you and I both were there. And I don't think there was anything really kind of earth-shattering about the actual state of the franchise. One thing that kind of intrigued me a little bit was obviously the growth of the revenue has occurred. I think if I remember the percentage exactly right, it was about a 23% clip.
Just under 24, yeah.
Yeah, from 2013 to 2014, which was that's outstanding. I mean, if you can grow a business at 23% a year, that's doing great.
Yep.
But the thing that surprised me in that pie chart with that 23% growth was that the revenue from the London game stayed flat, which was surprising because, you know, the Jaguars got some exclusivity.
Well, it stayed flat
for that.
It stayed flat as a percentage overall. So it grew at the same rate as the rest. So
I got you.
I think they made more money. There was more revenue.
I wish they'd put a number on that.
Yeah.
You know, because they never really got in the specifics of that. And, you know, the gate revenue stayed the same. But, you know, with the exclusivity that they got with the marketing opportunities, I was kind of curious to know how that grew.
The chart they showed, it did not give a specific dollar amount year one to year two. It showed overall growth percentage. And the percent that the London game made up of the overall revenue stayed the same. So what that tells me is
it grew.
It grew at the same rate.
Basically it grew 23%.
Okay. That's what it looked like.
It would have been interesting to have them kind of expand on that a little bit, you know, to find out more. Because, I mean, that was the one intriguing thing about the deal that they made with the NFL about going to London was, hey, look, you know, we've got some opportunities to develop, you know, a brand over there in the UK. And with that opportunity to bring the brand over there is an opportunity to monetize that brand.
And I don't think we'll ever see the actual numbers of any of this, because this team is already more transparent than any other NFL team as far as the information
which
they
share. Which is crazy. I mean,
at the State of the Union. And so most franchises and business would not give that type of insight that are a private company. If you're public, obviously you have to disclose all kinds of things. But as a private company, most people don't share that. They already share a bunch. They're not going to get into the specific numbers, I don't think, ever. And so I think –
well, they don't go to a lot of specific numbers like the TV revenue.
No, they're not going to go. But they show overall growth and percentage of growth, which is great information for – and they show where the Jaguars rank compared to the rest of the NFL still.
To me, that's great stuff.
Still near the bottom, which you would expect as a small market, but growing and increasing. And year over year was great growth. And I think all that was very, very positive and exciting. And then – piggybacking that was the
shipyards,
which really has nothing to do with the team outside. You know, our owner is going to be the one that's going to be the overall master developer, whatever you want to call it. And the one connection is part of the plans are to have a practice facility over there, which if they're anything like the pictures.
Yeah, and I didn't really understand. Was it
like multi-level.
The multi-level practice fields where one of them would have shade. And was that, you know,
indoor facility, basically.
Well, you know. As part of that was the practice facility, the locker room, you know, the day-to-day, would that get moved over? They didn't really get into specifics.
The pictures were...
but they were cool.
It was
way cool.
It was unbelievable.
I just know that, you know...
the amount of money just invested to have Populous, who's the design company...
which Populous doesn't do anything for cheap.
Nothing. The cost of just that little presentation we saw, I don't even want to guess what the investment was just in that.
Yeah, and we'll get into this further, but I remember coming here in 1995... and, you know, my day to work every day was coming across the Main Street Bridge and driving down Bay Street and seeing that vacant property for all those years. And for what? 20 years I've been looking at that area going, man, I wish somebody would do something. And I remember in 1995 talking to Joel Schmange and saying, man, Joe, we need to see if we can buy that. I mean, that's prime real estate, you know, not knowing
you
that.
You should have.
You know,
it was owned by the, and it was owned by the city. Problem. I mean, but
I don't know if it was owned by the city
changed,
at that point.
It's changed ownership
so many different times. But I remember sitting there.
And there's environmental cleanup stuff that needs to be done.
Right.
There's all kinds of stuff. But
what a great opportunity!
Oh, that, it's a great piece of property
that the city has of making that really kind of shine and be a focal point of the city. And
it would change downtown
architecturally. Looking at some of the renderings with the video and the drawings,
unreal.
Look fantastic because, hey, look, I'm a fisherman. I fish up and down that river and that stretch all the time.
You could have a place to stop and get a couple burgers and some drinks.
Well, that, but then also, I mean, going through that stretch of river, I mean, you see the old shipyards, the old docks, yeah, and everything else, and I thought that the rendering, the architect that
they
got up and talked about it and talked about his vision for it based on what the history of the property was, I thought that was, I mean, it takes a very special person, a person that has vision and creativity to be able to come up with something like that. And what he came up with, I thought was simply fantastic.
Is that video anywhere that for people to watch? Is it on Jaguars.com?
It is on Jaguars.com.
So, if you haven't seen it and you want to see what we're talking about, go to Jaguars.com and click on the Shipyards presentation. And I know it's not football specific as far as what we talk about most of the time, but as far as just an overall, you get a sense of the big vision that Shad Khan has. And not just for this team, but for the city and what the Jaguars can do and the influence that they can have on the overall day in and day out life of Jacksonville. And it's a very – I highly recommend everyone to go to Jaguars.com and look at that.
Yeah, it's exceptional. And when you go to Jaguars.com, we're going to bring up our compatriot here in the studio. And let me get this plug in for him because every Wednesday, John Osher and J.P. Shadrick on Jaguars.com Live. 1 p.m. every Wednesday, they'll have special guests, keep you informed with the latest Jaguar news, and take your social media questions, Jaguars.com Live. Every Wednesday at 1 p.m. on Jaguars.com. And there is so much more on Jaguars.com all week long because Jaguars.com is at the NFL Combine, and J.P. Shadrick, who is joining us right now, is a big part of that. And we welcome him in now. JP.
Hey, what's up, guys?
We're plugging you, brother.
I hear it. I appreciate that. And this week it's live Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday here in Indianapolis. And I can report to you it is absolutely cold in this town this week.
It's cold here, too.
I was going to say, it's not real warm here.
It is. I woke up today, and it was 2 degrees below zero.
Nice.
In Indianapolis this morning.
Nice.
And that was a nice wake-up call temperature on the hotel phone line. And then, but the most of the walk to the stadium, we're at the JW Marriott here downtown. We stayed here before for games here. But you walk through the convention center, which is, there's ramps that go across the street. So you're indoors most of the time. But the media folks are forced to go outside the last half block and walk out in the elements.
Oh, no. How dare you guys have to do that?
Hey,
a half
this bald head without a hat does not like it at all.
Oh my gosh, you're so tough, JP.
But well, JP, before you continue on, for a lot of people that don't know this, Indianapolis is really
great downtown.
One of the great downtown convention gathering spots in the United States, and many consider it to be the number one convention spot in the United States. So, in the number of miles of access to that convention area is extremely long.
All indoors.
And it's all indoors. I mean, much like, Minneapolis has a lot of the indoor access to the mall and all that, Indianapolis has the same type of thing, and it's all, centered around the convention business that happens in Indianapolis.
Which is a big reason why the league continues to have the combine here, because there are spaces for meeting rooms and other hotels adjoining it that they have, teams rent out the rooms there for official meetings and such. And it's just a real nice central location. The Lucas Oil Stadium is set up great for it. The convention center beside it, all these hotels. So really don't need to move it. There's a rumor that they might move this thing, but why? I mean, this is a perfect spot for it. It's always been here, so keep it here.
Well, and I remember back when it was at the old stadium, and certainly there's been a lot of improvements made with Lucas Oil Field, But it's a great venue. It's a happening town this week and next week, for early part of next week, because the combine stretches all the way to Monday, I believe, with the players' activities and all the field stuff. And so it is really the place to be when it comes to the National Football League. And I guess you could say the college players. And the media that gathers at the NFL Combine now is unbelievable compared to what it used to be, because back in the old days, they didn't bring the coaches and the general managers there to talk at the podium throughout the course of the week. It was all about just an evaluation of the players. It wasn't really designed to accommodate media. Now that's all changed. The NFL Network is running 24/7 coverage on the NFL Combine. Jaguars.com is running extensive coverage on the Combine. And today, Gus Bradley was at the podium. Other coaches and general managers have been at the podium. And Dave Caldwell, I believe, is supposed to speak tomorrow. Is that correct, JP?
Yeah, that's right. Let me just the scene overall here. There's over 1,000 credentialed media at this thing. So think about that, first of all. There's
ballpark,
the main lobby of the
question for you. Ballpark. How many credentialed media members would be at a Super Bowl?
Oh, a lot more.
Oh, I bet it's 4,000. Yeah,
okay.
4,000.
I mean, we're talking maybe the world's greatest sporting event that has 4,000. Okay,
well,
and
listen,
the NFL Combine has 1,000.
Well, this is all you have to put in perspective. This will be followed over the next week at a higher level than any NBA basketball game, any NHL hockey game, and if there was any other professional sport going on besides football, it'll get higher ratings,
it's crazy, isn't it?
More interest, more media about a bunch of guys running around in their underwear and asking questions.
But it's
not.
But it's more than that. So much more than that, isn't it, JP?
No, it totally is. We haven't started the Underwear Olympics part yet. I mean, that starts tomorrow. They're not in the field yet.
But, I mean, that's what they're going to show on TV.
You're right. And so now the lead-up to it is just the guys coming through position group by position group. Yesterday it was offensive linemen and tight ends and specialists. So it was kind of a light day in terms of the actual the big names to come through. Today it was quarterback day, wide receiver day, and running back day. Mariota talked today, and then Winston actually got moved to tomorrow. He'll do his tomorrow, the top two quarterbacks. So the big scene will be, of course, Jameis Winston tomorrow. But when you walk in the main lobby of the East Club here, and it's, you know, all the national media are set up along Radio Row. A lot of teams like us, we brought the .com crew. There are plenty of teams in the league now that do the same thing. And over the last 3 years of just me coming here, that's grown exponentially. Teams kind of build up the website departments, and that's added a lot to it as well. But the whole club area is filled with writers, chairs all the way down, with three podiums jammed in the middle. I think there's 8 tables off to the side for the smaller players to sit around when they bring those guys in, and everybody's just jammed in one little spot. So they'll call out. There's a coach or a GM on the podium. They go every 15 minutes. And then right in the middle of that, they'll say, hey, running back A is on table number 1. And some people are over there for that. In the middle of that, it's another player is on podium C, and then podium B. And then at the busiest time, all three podiums are filled and like 3 tables are going at once. So you have to really pick and choose what players you want and what you're really trying to cover, because there's 1,000 people covering 1,000 different things.
Well,
so
JP,
it's a frenzy in there, man. It really is.
Well, and it's part of that frenzy, you know, with so many different people coming to the podium, there's a lot of confusion about pronunciations. And, JP, we got this, and we want to play this for you because this was a couple of the media members trying to figure out Gus Bradley's name. Let's play it.
Okay. Gus Brady? Gus Bradley?
Gus Brady. Can you spread the word in Indianapolis that it's Gus Bradley for us, please?
We'll pass that along. That was the first I've heard of that. I'll make sure we try to correct that tomorrow.
That's bad.
That's unheard of. That's really
Gus,
bad.
Gus Brady? Wow. Gus Bradley.
Yeah. Where's that guy from? Bradley. Do we know?
We don't know.
He needs his credential revoked. If you're a reporter and covering the NFL and you don't know every NFL coach's full name, you might want to get a new job.
We had to cut that out. We're actually scheduled to have Gus on Tony tonight at 6 o'clock, and I was gonna start with that little bit of snippet there for Gus, just kind of loosen him up.
I'm sure, he'd love that.
Oh, he would love it.
I know
he would love
it. Good sport.
I tell you what, though, guys, he seemed in good spirits today. You know, he was on the podium, and then he was on Jaguars.com Live with us after that. And, I mean, the message is clear. I mean, they got to take a next step somehow. You know, the results the last 2 years are what they are. And he's gone around and said everything except wins and losses. He still don't want to go there, but yeah, the winning's important. But there's the next step, and this is part of that next step, getting the next wave of draft picks in. Of course, he's been busy on free agency, I think, more than a lot. That's more than this, at least right now, just because that's the next thing really on the radar. March 10th, that cranks up, and that'll be a very important part of this offseason. So all that combined is the next step. So you heard a lot of that phrase today from Gus Bradley, and always in good spirits, and certainly in this, on the few chances he gets to be in a national spotlight, it's always a positive return, I think, from everybody that interacts with Gus.
Well, and JP, when you talk about this next step, we want you to bear with us here, because I want to play the clip where he talks specifically about that. Joe, go ahead and roll that.
Yeah. Well, we've got a young group of guys. I think, you know, when Dave and I and Shad got together, we kind of came up with this whole plan or this process that we were putting together, and I think we're right on schedule as far as the youth of our team. We have some younger players. You know, we've added in some veterans. I think we signed 7 free agents last year that all helped us tremendously in what we're trying to build. So I think we need to take the next step now. And you know, I think at times we take on the personality of being developmental coaches, and we've seen some of our players, you know, really do some good things. But I think that next step is for us to develop as a team, you know, to form that brotherhood. And you know, I think that comes with continuity, and hopefully we can build off now. You know, at times we had, 8 rookie starters, I think, last year. So for them to come back another year and build off of that, I think, is going to be helpful for us.
And with playing that clip, to go back to Tuesday, JP and Tony, didn't you guys get the impression at the State of the Franchise press conference on Tuesday that Mark Lamping and Shad Khan are kind of having that expectation as well, this team taking the next step? Because they always talked about, well, when winning starts to happen more, we can do this. I kind of got that feel.
Well, I mean, listen, it's year 3. And I think everybody – I wouldn't use the term growing impatient. But I think everyone's like, okay, we understood the pain and the process we were going to go through by with the plan that, you know, Gus and Dave and Shad all said we're going to do. Go young, you know, scratch the slate clean, start fresh. And everyone knew it was going to be a painful process as we went through it. But I think they were saying year 3 is the year we're going to start seeing the dividends pay off. I'm not saying they're going to win the division and be Super Bowl contender. But they're going to be.
Expectations are higher now.
The expectations are, hey, listen, come December, we should be fighting for maybe that last wild card spot and be in the conversation. You know, in December, it always starts and there's like, you know, 12 teams in the AFC and 12 in the NFC that are vying for the playoffs, and there's those 6 teams. You know, you see the networks always do it. The 16's on the bubble for the last, you know, wild card spot. You know, the Texans and all these different teams, long shots. And you want to at least be in that conversation come December as one of the teams who have a chance to get into the playoffs.
Did you get that impression also, JP, that was kind of brought up?
I did, yeah, a couple things. Going back to Gus and those comments today, he told us a little later on Jaguars.com Live today, it was like they were teaching football 101 in the past, and now they're going to have to be teaching football 401 or 501, a little, you know, a more senior class.
So in other words, he pulled up a little academia reference.
Oh, he did, yes, he did. It took me a minute to figure that out.
Did you figure that out, being from Alabama?
I did.
They don't have 401 at Alabama.
No, it's 101.
It's 101 and 102.
101B, 101C, 101D.
I think if you're working on your PhD, it's 201.
They don't have
PhDs
in
Alabama.
Yeah, and
if you take 101 twice, it doesn't equal 202. It's 101. So going back to the State of the Franchise, you know, it seemed like you want to try to get the infrastructure in place if you're Mark Lamping, Shad Khan. The building, get that right for when things do go right on the football side. It can be sold out. You can enjoy the amenities that are really there, you know, full to their fullest extent. I think that's – you got to do your part. Get the amenities right. Get everything right that you can control and believe that the wins will come on the football side. So they're doing their part.
All right, well, JP, we're going to take a break, and we're going to hold you over to the next segment as well. whether you like it or not.
All right, I got another segment. Nice.
Yes, you do.
I want another segment. I earned it.
Well, we want to have another segment with you because there's some important information, I think, some work that's going on in Tallahassee today that's going to be a big determining factor about some of the possible improvements that will be happening here to Everbank Field. But let's take a break. Folks, Prime Sport is the leading global sports travel and event management company offering corporate and fan travel packages and hospitality events for corporations, professional sports teams, and fans. For more information, visit PrimeSport.net, PrimeSport.com. I'm going to get hammered for that.
That was poor.
PrimeSport.com. PrimeSport is the official sponsor of the 2015 Jaguars offseason. More.
Bring the reliever in.
With Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, and J.P. Shadrick right here on Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
And Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli here in studio. J.P. Shadrick joining us live from the Combine in Indianapolis, Indiana. And since
who had the read going into break?
I was getting to that gaffe because that was absolutely poor, that I absolutely screwed up in one spot there.
Let's go with
Prime Sport. And I know that we're very hard on you, J.P., and because I screwed up, I wanted to give Tony Baselli an opportunity to screw up on a read as well.
So he throws it to me at the last second. He's reading this.
He's been studying the card for the last 10 minutes.
Anything.
And so, all right, Tony, go ahead.
All right, JP, you'll notice it. You'll recognize this one. This is a good old-fashioned Republic Services
read. I can't wait to hear it. Yeah, I'm excited to hear this.
I'll just give the basic. I won't give my add my little extra spots I like to do. Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. They're the official waste provider of the Jaguars and have been proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here.
He definitely was better than me.
Yeah, but it was still an awkward pause after there. But that's okay.
No, that was purposeful. I was trying to give a little emphasis to the Republic.
Yeah, the emphasis on the wrong syllable there.
That's all right.
All right, enough of
it. It was between breaths.
Let's get to some meat here. As part of the State of the Union address that the Jaguars gave on Tuesday, the conversation went to possible improvements to the East and West clubs, and some of that money could possibly come from Tallahassee.
State funds.
State funds that were available, and I don't remember exactly what the number was. It could be available. Is $30 million the right number that I'm thinking of?
$20 or $30 million.
The way I understand it, it's $1 million a year for 30 years. It would be paid back to the Jaguars for the investment.
And that was supposed to happen today. Do you guys have an update on that?
From what I read, I just read actually a little while ago on from the Times Union report that the commission that was supposed to look at this delayed it, and so it's going to go before the full legislature in March now. So it's been pushed back a little bit. Now I guess there are some votes in the full legislature that were not going to be involved in this committee that could possibly vote against this thing for all four of the entities that are trying to get money out of this, not just the Jaguars. So. I don't know how bad of a thing this is for the Jags' chances on this, but it's not great, I don't think. You'd rather have the committee look at it and approve it and be done with it.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, time is of the essence.
That's the way I read it, just the first meeting.
I mean, first and foremost, time is of the essence. I mean, if they were hoping to have the decision today to where they could take those funds and put them to work.
But even if they had a decision today, it still has to get in the budget. And the way it works is you have the House side and you have the Senate side. And they both present a budget, and then they go into conference at the end of the session, which is, you know, let's say end of April, beginning of May sometime. And once they get into the budget, they have to come to an agreement on a budget, and then it goes to the governor. And the governor has a line item veto right, so he can go through the entire budget and veto anything he wants to veto. And then once he gets through that process, signs off on the budget, then the budget becomes law. And then the fiscal year, I believe, starts July 1st in the state. And so really the soonest you'd get the money and know that you're getting the money for sure, I mean, you can have assurances. I mean, that's what you hire lobbyists to do. You hire lobbyists to help manage the situation over there, to get the right legislators educated of what you're doing, and find out really where you stand on the issue. And so you can have an idea of where you stand, and you can have an idea of how the governor feels about the project before we ever get to the veto process. But really, for it to be finalized is really the around July, and then the money is dispersed at that time. Now, based on how that goes, you can take the risk of saying we're going to move forward because we're whatever percentage sure we're going to get the money. As far as what happened today, it can be good or bad. Sometimes you want it to be delayed because you know you in the conference, in the committee, you might not have the votes you need, or it's not lining up the way you want it to. And so pushing it, not always. Usually you want it done in committee. It gets done in committee. It goes before the floor, already approved by the committee, and then they vote it up or down. It's an easier process. But if it goes to before the full body, I mean, it's more to manage. Again, that's why you have lobbyists.
More people to manage.
More people to manage. And
or to lobby.
And, so it's not good or bad. I mean, it could be good or bad. You really have to be inside to figure out exactly
whether
where you stand.
Whether it is good or bad.
Right.
But let me ask you this. If that decision was made today, could that project, could it have been started soon with the anticipation, we feel like this thing's going to happen, we're going to go ahead and get started. I mean, so could this delay?
That's really how much risk Shad wants to take. Because Shad's going to have to put his own money out there, basically. I mean, the Jaguars. I mean, Shad. So the Jaguars have to put their money out there and start the process with the hope of being reimbursed, as JP said, over the next 30 years of the project. So you don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you really don't know what it looks like, and it's just how much appetite,
but how much risk you want to take. But with this being pushed back, with JP and Tony, both of you, since it's getting pushed back to March now, does that just automatically push, you know, this project, which I think that they wanted to get it in this year, right? Does that push it? Does that push it to 2016?
You know, I wasn't sure they wanted to get it done. I don't think that was brought up.
What?
By the renderings, it made it feel like it was going to get done this year.
Okay.
But who knows if that's what the future
plans
are. They
got the new sponsor of it, too.
Yeah, but they have a sponsor
they
for the club.
Sponsor lined up and ready.
Sure.
But, I mean, my guess is that sponsorship is based on whether, you know, I don't know if it's contingent on them getting the clubs done. They're going to be the club sponsor no matter what, the way I understood that agreement.
But does the level of sponsorship change?
It might.
We don't know.
We don't know any of that. I don't know if this was scheduled to be a 15 project or this was all along scheduled to be a 16 project once they got through the budget cycle of the state of Florida.
Okay. Because I didn't know that. I didn't know, is this 15? Because when they kind of talked about it, you kind of got the impression that was something that they would like to do this year, depending on what happened at the legislature or what happened in Tallahassee today.
Well, listen, you got to remember, too, I mean, the Jaguars and Shad have invested a lot of money in a building they don't own already. I mean, this is a city facility that the Jaguars pay a lease on. And so they already put all the money in the locker rooms, in the training room. He invested money in the scoreboards and the north end zone and everything else. And there was some city money. I'm not saying, but I mean, that was an investment by Shad. And that's why.
Yeah, it's got to be about $80 million for him, right?
Yeah, already. I mean, when you talk about, if anyone ever questions the commitment of Shad Khan to Jacksonville in this area, his actions speak louder than anything else of his investment into this franchise, investment into making this stadium up to date, a facility that is old compared to the standards in the NFL, but making it one of the better, and all the statistics came out, the best fan experience in the NFL as far as what goes on in the stadium. I mean, he is committed to Jacksonville. And so, and only he and Mark can answer this, and we don't know. We're not privy to these conversations. You know, how much more does he want to invest of his own money into the public facility without any assurances from state money to partner at the very least in the process? I don't know that. We're not privy to those conversations, but I think that probably has something to do with what the timeline really is.
All right, I'll move along here, JP. Other impressions from Indianapolis. Anything else kind of strike you?
You know, just going around listening today, I listened to Mariota talk. He was kind of boring for me today.
What'd you want him to do?
I think that's. I mean, I don't know. He's just not. I don't know. He was just kind of a bore. I was out of bed didn't mean anything, Tony.
Was kind of Johnny Manziel exciting last year for you, JP?
He was pretty boring, too.
Okay.
Actually. So what are they going to say? They're not going to say anything. That's the way it works.
God,
now, Winston tomorrow might be a little more exciting because they'll have something to say. Maybe.
Well.
You know? Other guys, I'm just trying to think of some other guys that kind of stood out to me today. Running backs, Melvin Gordon. You know, he missed the single season rushing record in the NCAA, Barry Sanders record by like 41 yards or something.
And who did he play for? What college?
Wisconsin.
A lot of people don't know.
Yeah, Wisconsin.
Right.
Wisconsin. Abdullah was very good at the podium today, the Nebraska running back. I was impressed by both of those guys today. It was interesting to hear Ray Farmer, the Browns GM today, admit the texting. it was him, and apologizing to the owner and the city and everybody involved. And of course, didn't want to talk about any kind of punishment coming his way. He knows there's one coming, but flat out admitted it at the start of his press conference today that it was him.
Well, as he said, I read some of his quotes. He said, "Hey, look, I'm owning it. You know, I did it." And then also, you had the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, at the podium, and he was asked the question: "Is there?" In any kind of need for a relationship repair between you and Ray Farmer. Because, you know, the last thing a head coach wants is a general manager for that matter, texting
right.
the sideline about play calling or anything else. And Mike Pettine said, no, we've covered it and we've moved on.
Listen, I appreciate Farmer's honesty, but come on. There was a smoking gun. I mean, there was no way out of it.
He was busted.
I mean, he was – I mean, so let's not – I mean, listen, I'm glad he didn't drag it out and make himself look like, you know, an idiot by lying. But it was a smoking gun. Everyone knew he did it. I mean, he had no choice.
Another interesting connection today, Dan Quinn, the new head coach of the Falcons, spoke. And, you know, hasn't had a lot of time on the job yet, but – he's a defensive guy, of course, and wants that kind of pass rush they had in Seattle. Of course, Gus wanted the same thing here. He had it in Seattle, too. But he's got an interesting connection to Dante Fowler Jr., the Florida outside linebacker that's coming out this year.
How's that?
Remember, Quinn was an assistant at Florida before he was in Seattle.
Yeah,
and actually recruited him to go to Florida, so they know each other very well. He saw him come up and was talking a lot about Fowler today and what he can do well. So we'll see what happens with that. And where the Falcons go. Also interesting to hear Rex Ryan yesterday talk about combine interview process here and what it means. And you can get a lot out of a guy in a room. Man, you can see if he's good on the board and knows the game. Or you might say, oh, this guy doesn't know anything. But if he's a good player, you don't care either way. Like that's the funny part of it. So if he can play, he can play. That's what you gather out of Rex Ryan's comments yesterday.
Just a couple comments. There's nobody that's more entertaining at a podium than maybe Rex Ryan.
So you're probably happy, JP. At least you had some. You were entertained.
Yeah, it was. It was entertaining. I
want to make sure you're entertained, JP.
I don't want to hear some boring Oregon quarterback talk.
And then, just another comment. Dan Quinn. You know, there was many changes to Thomas Dimitroff's role in Atlanta. Dan Quinn has final say.
Oh, the 53-man roster.
So that's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic works because Dan Quinn has final say, but he wasn't the one who picked the general manager or the new player personnel, which I think is Scott Pioli, right, working with.
Yeah, basically Dimitroff was stripped of every responsibility he had pretty much.
Was Scott Pioli that was brought
Scott
in?
Pioli,
so Scott Pioli and Thomas Dimitroff.
Yep.
So now you got those two guys, and then you've got a head coach. And those two were hired before they hired Dan Quinn, and now Dan Quinn's got, you know, determination over the final 53. That's going to be an interesting dynamic.
It's a weird deal, and I'll try to get it exactly right. Pioli is over free agency and putting the draft together. Dan Quinn has final say of the 53-man roster. And from the sounds of it, supposedly – Dimitroff gets to make the pick, who they're going to pick, but it's going to be a group effort. I mean, it's
weird.
Weird setup.
That sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
I mean,
basically,
Arthur Blank came in and said, we're going to fire the head coach. I'm going to hire the head coach I want. I'm going to bring in Scott Pioli to do the draft and free agency. And, Thomas, I'm not going to fire you, but I'm going to pretty much take away all the responsibility you had last year.
Very, very interesting occurrence there in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Well, JP,
and tomorrow, Yeah, tomorrow, big day here, guys, too, with Dave Caldwell on the podium at noon. We'll have him on Jaguars.com live after that at 12:30. And, of course, Jameis Winston. That's the big national news here tomorrow.
Question for you is, will you guys on Jaguars.com carry Dave Caldwell at the podium live?
Yes. It was the same as today. We carried Gus live at noon and then came over and did live with us at 12:30. It'll be the same thing tomorrow. So you can watch Dave live on the podium.
Okay.
Tomorrow at noon, and then live with us at 12:30. Absolutely. Okay.
JP, one question: are you so you're in all these press conferences, correct?
Most of them, yeah.
Do you ask any questions?
Yeah, a few. Yeah.
So you, so what is your question for Jameis Winston tomorrow? Give us the question you're going to ask Jameis. What do you want? What do you? What do you want to know?
Why would I ask him a question?
I don't know. You're all excited, but you're in the room. You're a journalist. Why don't you ask a question?
I didn't ask a question.
Okay, I'm saying. So what are you going to ask? What are you going to ask Winston tomorrow? Are you going to ask him anything, or he's going to sit there and complain that you're not entertained?
Ask him anything.
Why not?
If you were to ask him something,
just sit back and get entertained.
If you were to ask him something, what would it be?
I don't know. What he thinks about Tampa, maybe.
You can't do any better than that. Why don't you ask him about the crab legs?
Well, I'm not going to ask anything.
Crab legs.
Yeah. Crab legs. That's a great one.
Ask him if he regrets standing up on the table and yelling the obscenity in the middle of the student hall.
I might get him to repeat it. See if he'll do that.
You should ask him if the crabs that he stole. How did he cook them once he got back to the house with them?
That's a good idea. Take some notes.
Yeah.
I have one job for you tomorrow. Just one, JP. Amidst all you sitting there and being entertained, I want you to ask one question. I don't care who it is. Okay. I don't care what press conference. I want JP. I want someone from the podium to say, yes, JP Shadrick in the back, and I want to hear a JP question.
Okay. All right.
That's all I ask.
I'll do that.
All right.
Well, JP, thank you for joining us tonight, and we look forward to coverage tomorrow starting at what time, 12 noon?
12 noon with Dave Caldwell. We'll have some morning reports, some written reports on the website, John Oger, myself, in the morning. And then, 12 noon with the Caldwell Presser, 12:30 with .com Live, inside the Jags after that. And another full day here tomorrow.
All right, JP, have a great time, and we'll look forward to watching you on Jaguars.com tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one. Appreciate it.
See you, JP.
Folks, get more for your business in 2015 with the Ultimate Business Makeover Sweepstakes, presented by Comcast Xfinity. The Money Pages, 1010XL, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. For more information, go to Jaguars.com. More of Jaguars Thursday with me, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli, right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
For season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli here, Jaguars Thursday. Appreciate J.P. Shadrick taking the time to be on the phone with us from the NFL Combine. Remember, jaguars.com for continuing coverage of everything that's going on there in Indianapolis. Earlier today, Gus Bradley was at the podium, and Tony, he talked a little bit about the new offensive system and the newness that is associated with all of that. And let's play that cut and get your reaction to it.
The newness of the offense is going to be a challenge for our players. They're going to be learning a new system. We're trying to incorporate, so there's a lot of dislikes from our old system. And but it's very intriguing. But I really like the dynamics of the room now with the experience that we built in that room.
And what he's talking about, Tony, obviously, is with the addition of new offensive coordinator Greg Olson, offensive line coach Doug Marone, Kelly Skipper, the running backs coach, and Nathaniel Hackett, the quarterbacks coach, is the newness of an offensive system. And he said they want to create a lot of just likes. Explain that to the listener of what a just like is.
So if you call so everyone runs inside or outside zone. Outside stretch, inside zone, some single back, some two back. And so everyone calls it a little bit something different. So we used to call it 34 zone. I think the Jaguars last year called it 14 gut. And another team might call it this. And each system, whether it's West Coast, you know, the system that Coughlin had and Gilbright, run and shoot, whatever it is, the coordinator and the staff have a way they call things. Pass routes the same way. Some are number systems. So you have 789 determining you want a post, corner, fly route combination or whatever it is, the old route tree. Some use words to describe what it is. And so what they want to do is take last year's terminology, and instead of getting 53 guys to relearn all new terminology, can the staff under Greg Olson come together and figure out, can they incorporate some of the existing language into the system that this offensive staff wants to run?
And why they are trying to do that is because you've got such a young group of players on the offensive side of the ball. The more you can keep the terminology similar to what they had become accustomed to under Jed Fish, the quicker the learning process, hopefully, it is for them. I mean, there are certain things that are going to be changed. In fact, Gus Bradley talked at length about how today at the podium at the combine, he talked at length about how the evaluation process and that this new offensive staff has now taken the time to evaluate the players that they have to then determine exactly what type of system or systems that they're going to be able to run or schemes that they're going to be able to run to best take advantage of the personnel that they have in place.
And this isn't new to the NFL, and it's not just because you're a young team. I think you're right, Jeff. It helps a young team. Even coordinators will go into a veteran team and try to figure out the best way to make the smoothest transition. Because if I'm an offensive lineman and 34 zone has meant one thing my entire career, and then all of a sudden they're going to come and call it, you know, four zebra. Not that I can't learn it, but it's going to take recognition. It's almost like learning a new language to a certain extent, so that 34 zone, I immediately knew how to come up to this level. And now I got to reincorporate, okay, four zebra means this. And the big thing is on the protection side and blitz pickup and the route combinations. It's even harder for those guys because you can have systems that are very wordy with numbers describing everything.
Yeah,
to systems where it's all words and no numbers associated
with it. Yeah, because I'll give you an example. I remember Joe Walton, who was the head coach of the New York Jets when I went there in 1989, and we had what I thought was probably one of the smartest quarterbacks in the National Football League, Kenny O'Brien.
Yep.
I mean, Kenny O'Brien, extremely bright, exceptionally bright. And Joe Walton's system, the way that his offensive terminology worked, it was all terms memorization. No, and even if a play, if you ran, let's say, a 34 zone play action, there was no language in the pass part of that play call associated with the run part. So it was all totally different. Like one of them might have been gorilla, and the other one might have been, you know, alligator. You know, so it was all memorization.
Yeah.
And then some systems have, you know, like you were talking about, numbers where you say, okay, 789, and that's the route combinations, it's X, Y, Z. And those are the routes for those particular positions. It's easier to understand. There's a system to it. System terminology, to me, has always been easier for an offensive player to understand. I think it's – and I don't know, maybe it was for you as well.
Well, I mean, listen.
I don't want to get too crazy on the X's and O's
here. Well, it's not that – I mean, for me, offensive line-wise, I mean, it's you learn the concept, and I think it's more for the quarterback in the passing game. It can be very critical because you – call protection, and sometimes you just call the front side route, and the backside receiver needs to understand just by memorization what their responsibility is on that. Right. I mean, so there's so many things that go into it, and I think the right move is for Greg Olson and his staff to get together and say, let's try to make it the transition as simple as possible.
All right, let's take a break here on Jaguars Thursday. We come back. I want to let Gus Bradley give one more comment on the auto position because that is certainly a position that the Jaguars are going to be looking at in free agency and also at the NFL draft when that rolls around this springtime, the auto position, the newly created or turned position for the Jaguars. And we'll do that on Jaguars Thursday with me, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Welcome back to Jaguars Thursday. Last segment here with me, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli. And now, It's time to take a look around the league. A 360-degree look presented by 360 Access. Don't mess around when it comes to game time. The 360 Access team of experts is available 24/7 to make sure you have the best experience for the biggest games of the year. Visit 360access.com to learn more. A couple things around the National Football League. Most importantly, the news out of Broncos camp, because I think that some of these news items directly relate to the Jaguars. John Elway made some comments today that he has not heard directly from Peyton Manning, but that he wants him back and that they are going to work extremely hard to lock up Demaryius Thomas, the wide receiver, very talented wide receiver. But the commentary never focused on the tight end, Julius Thomas, who I think is a very obvious candidate for the Jaguars to target in free agency. I think when free agency starts, when that tampering period begins on March 7th, I would be shocked if the Jaguars, Tony, are not calling him up as soon as they can to possibly work out a deal with him, because the Jaguars need veteran weapons on offense, and particularly one at the tight end position.
The question you have to ask yourself in evaluating Julius Thomas is he a product of Peyton Manning? And the fact that they had Demaryius Thomas, Wes Welker this year, Emmanuel Sanders, I mean, great threats outside. And Peyton Manning, who is outstanding at dictating coverage and finding the weakness in it. Was he successful with that, or is he successful because he's a fabulous athlete, physical freak at the tight end position who can really stretch the field vertically and cause all kinds of matchup problems? That's the question.
What do you think?
I don't know, because all we've ever seen him do is play with Peyton Manning. He's not an inline blocker. He's not a real physical guy. He's a decent blocker at best, but he's been fabulous in the passing game. And I think I'm with you, Jeff. If you're the Jaguars, that's a path you have to go down and really do a lot of studying and make a conclusion. If you think he is that type of player and it's not just a result of the situation that he was in and with Peyton Manning, then I think that's one you go after hard.
Also, another item from around the league, you had the text gate that we talked about. Yep. With Ray Farmer texting down to the Cleveland Browns sideline and the coaching staff. You have Deflate Gate, but then you also have Noise Gate, where the Atlanta Falcons were caught piping noise into the stadium. Those three issues are all expected to be resolved quickly. Thomas Dimitroff made some comments today at the podium at the Indianapolis Combine that he expects penalties to come down soon. All three of these issues that are hovering over all three of these teams could end up be resulting in draft pick loss. That would be huge.
Well, I think so. If you look at all three, I think the noise issue with the Falcons, who Dimitroff said today the coaching staff and football operations had no idea it was a stadium issue, but they took responsibility for it. And the texting will be settled quickly because everyone's admitting guilt. The one that's going to take some time is the deflated balls, because more and more information comes out now that they tried to sneak in a illegal kicking ball as well during the game, that the officials went and fixed the deflated balls at halftime, that there's video surveillance, and the fact that nobody from the Patriots, now maybe the poor equipment guy or the ball boy is going to be the fall guy on this deal, but I still have a hard time believing a part-time employee, a ball boy, on his own volition went and deflated footballs without anyone's knowledge.
No. You and I know the answer to that. Everybody knows the answer to that.
But I think that's going to take more time to sort through. I mean, that is a league investigation.
Out of these three things, which one will get penalized the worst?
The Patriots. If they find that the Patriots are guilty, they're going to be
– that should be number one.
Because they have a past history of breaking rules and cheating.
All right, the last item I'm going to bring up, because I don't want to say it gives me great joy – but I've never been a Warren Sapp fan, okay? And I don't know if everybody has heard this or not, but, I mean, Warren Sapp is unemployed because he got fired from his job at the NFL Network because he was busted for prostitution. And the police report
and physical and possibly battery. Yeah, or I don't know if it's battery, whatever. Some physical violence towards – physical contact
assault
towards –
charges. Yeah, so towards he's looking at prostitution women. And assault charges, according to the Arizona Republic.
And this was early Monday morning, so the Sunday night after the Super Bowl.
After the Super Bowl, the dispute came down between Sapp and two women because of price and that the money that he was paying them at his hotel room. I don't wish anything bad on anybody. But Warren Sapp, to me, has never been a favorite of mine. I think he's kind of a punk.
If I'm not mistaken, this isn't his first run-in at a Super Bowl with a lady of the night, is it? Wasn't there another or some other female issue? There was some other issue a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And I don't want to say the wrong thing. There was some issue. I remember it. But whether – I mean, listen. There's nothing to say. I mean, and here's the thing. The report on TMZ is that he took video
– He did.
Of the
– of a sexual act with one of the women.
And then showed it to the police. So, he's unemployed.
Not my favorite guy.
Not a great decision by Warren.
Well, Warren has not exactly had great decisions in his past anyway. You go all the way back to his days in Miami now. I mean, when he was coming out at this time of year, when he, I think, if I remember correctly, he got busted for...
There was a drug issue.
The drug test at the NFL Combine.
Yeah, and that's why he supposedly...
Fell in the draft. So it will be interesting to see which guys at the NFL Combine this year end up having a little bit of the Warren Sapp syndrome, because more than likely that will hit and hurt a few of the guys, the prospects at the NFL Draft Combine. NFL Draft coverage all week long on Jaguars.com, and then also throughout the course of the week, J.P. Shadrick, John Osher, Jaguars.com Live. Remember, each day, the next couple days at the NFL Combine. Tony, enjoyed it, and we'll talk in a couple weeks. I'm taking next week off.
I'll be here.